Welcome to Insights and Indicators. I'm Jason Thomas, Carlyle's Head of Global Research and Investment Strategy. And in this podcast, I share our observations and opinions on the economic landscape, as well as insights from research being conducted by our team here at Carlyle. Today, I'm joined by Peter Cornelius, Chief Economist for AlpInvest Partners, and we'll discuss what he's seeing and hearing from AlpInvest investors in light of the current macroeconomic and investment environment. As many of you know, Peter is the author of the Global Private Markets Quarterly, which I view as the best and most comprehensive summary of the current conditions in private markets, with a focus, of course, on buyouts, growth, venture, and private credit. This episode was recorded on July 16th, 2024, and the discussion reflects composite portfolio data and analysis of recent government reports that are accurate as of that date. Before turning to Peter, just a few words about what we've seen in our portfolio over the past month. I would say that there's an important distinction to be made about the level of economic activity and its growth rate. Right now, the level of activity is extremely high, and you can see that the number of people going through airports, the number of people that are seated for dining, total employment in the prime age cohort of 25 to 64 is at over a 20-year high. But there has been signs of some slowing growth from these very high levels. And I think that we've also seen that some of the slowdown in growth has effectively caused a slowdown in inflation. And so, you know, you no longer have growth that is really testing capacity limits, leading to some of those nonlinear price spikes we've seen over the last few years. And as a result, I think the Fed is very much in position to start the easing cycle. In an interview yesterday at the Economic Club of Washington, our chairman, David Rubenstein, gave Chair Powell the opportunity to essentially disabuse market participants of their expectation that the Fed would start cutting rates in September. David suggested that current futures pricings ascribed a 90% or more probability to a rate cut in September. Interestingly, in the past, when futures markets anticipate a rate cut, a probability of 80% or more, the Fed either accedes to what the market expects or actually devises a communication strategy to suggest the market may have it wrong or to rethink. And I thought it was notable that Chair Powell didn't do that. He, of course, didn't tell anyone what the Fed intends to do in September, but he seemed quite comfortable with the market ascribing such a high probability to a September cut. I think the next stage of this debate will really center on how many rate cuts are really coming. And perhaps just as importantly, what is that terminal rate? Or where is the Fed funds rate, 3-month SOFR, likely to average over the next 3 to 5 years? Where's that sort of steady state value? I think that the market had generally come to the conclusion that it was substantially higher than it was in the decade prior to the pandemic. And in fact, recent market pricing had it in a range of 3.75% to 4.25%. But now, as you get that enthusiasm for rate cuts, people start pricing in quite a lot more. And I think we're starting to be at that point again where the market is expecting far more from the Fed than it's likely to deliver, at least through the end of this year and into 2024. So I think a rate cut is coming in September. I think it's more likely than not that a second one will arrive by year end. But now I think we're in the stage of trying to start the debate, start the discussion about how many more rate cuts could realistically be expected from that point forward, given a potential change in administration, potential change in policy, and also the expectations for corporate earnings growth and broader economic activity to continue to hold up really well again over the next 12 to 24 months. So with that, I would like to turn to Peter, and we just received the Global Private Markets Quarterly. Thank you again for publishing that. It's always a really interesting read from my perspective, again, in terms of encapsulating what's happening in the markets. I wanted to start with the question about deal activity and you know, the private equity cycle. Obviously, the rate hikes and just the scale of the rate hikes, their sudden nature, really was a very negative shock, of course, to broader M&A activity, to deal activity. Where are we today in that private equity cycle, and how do you see it evolving over the next few months?
Well, thank you, Jason. I think the rate hikes you were just mentioning, which started in the first half of 2022, so a little bit more than 2 years ago, had a profound impact on financial markets and more specifically on the private equity cycle. Now, these rate hikes have been felt throughout the entire cycle. So when it comes to deal activity, between 2022 and 2023, deal volume globally fell by more than 50%. So very profound. And so that was actually the third sort of buyout cycle globally since the mid-1980s. And although it was not as dramatic as the global financial crisis, it was the second largest decline in global buyout volume on record. Now, as far as exits are concerned, this decline in deal activity has been even more significant. Exit activity globally declined by almost 55%. Now, as far as fundraising is concerned, it's very difficult to say because we don't really have real-time data. But what we do see in terms of the time it takes to get to a final close, the impact on financial markets and on private equity more specifically has also been felt in terms of fundraising, and here in particular in venture capital. Venture capital fundraising over the past 2 years has declined by almost 60%. Now that some central banks have begun to ease monetary policy, the European Central Bank, the Danish Central Bank, the Swedish Central Bank, and the Swiss National Bank, and as you just explained, this might be followed by a first rate cut here in the United States. We do see signs that the private equity cycle is turning. So in the first half of 2024, buyout activity has kind of stabilized. So last year, global volume came in at just a little bit more than $400 billion in the first half of this year. The total volume stands at roughly $220 billion, a significant increase in Q2 on a sequential basis. We also see signs of a stabilization in terms of exit activity and in terms of fundraising activity. So to the extent that central banks deliver and financial market conditions continue to ease, I believe that we see the signs of a new private equity cycle going forward.
So obviously, financing costs have increased. You noted in the Global Private Markets Quarterly just the remarkable scale of refinancing activity. Obviously, we're focused on the potential for cuts to base rates, but that spread component of portfolio company financing has come in quite a lot over the course of the year. I think you cited 30% of outstanding credits that had repriced in the first 6 months of the year. So, you know, that's an interesting aspect of that. Do you feel that that has contributed, the decline in deal costs, the deal finance costs, the expected reduction in base rates? How is the stabilization, as you described it, in deal activity? How has that been across geographies? Do you see it more pronounced among areas where there has been already cuts to central bank policy rates? Or what's the pattern that you've observed in the stabilization of activity?
What we see is actually that purchase price multiples have declined by roughly 12% in the first half of this year. And debt multiples have also declined as financing costs have increased. Now that the markets anticipate rate cuts in the US and elsewhere, financing costs or spreads have actually narrowed, and that has resulted in lower financing costs. But as you just explained, this has been felt mostly in terms of refinancing and repricing. Repricing activity has been absolutely buoyant in the first half of this year. 30% of outstanding loans have been repriced. We don't see this yet so much in terms of new deal volume. But to the extent that the financing costs continue to decline, one would anticipate a supporting effort in terms of more deal activity.
Yeah, it's interesting that it's the purchase price multiples that's done most of the work thus far. I guess you would suggest that most of the work, so to speak, in terms of increasing deal activity for the second half of the year may come from the decline in finance costs.
Yeah, absolutely. So financing costs should have positive impact on yield activity, but also in terms of exit activity. Keep in mind that the most important exit channel are actually trade sales to strategic investors.
What's the rough percentage there? I think, as everyone knows, the three primary exit channels are secondaries. That's, of course, where you sell a portfolio company to another private equity fund. Very often, that's your management team, you know, for reasons the business wants to remain private, you know, doesn't want to explore an IPO, but a strategic acquisition doesn't quite make sense. Then, of course, the IPO channel. And then, as you mentioned, the strategic sales to other operating companies. What's the general breakdown historically?
Well, generally, as far as buyouts are concerned, 55% of portfolio companies are exited via trade sales to strategic investors. As a result, exit activity is very much a function of global M&A activity. And here we haven't really seen a significant recovery in global M&A activity. As a result, exits have remained relatively shallow. The second most important channel are secondary buyouts. They account for roughly 30%, and the rest is IPOs. Now, in the venture capital market, things are a little bit different. Here, around 20% or so of portfolio companies are exited via IPOs. Now, to the extent that that interest rates do decline and spreads continue to narrow, we would expect global M&A activity to regain momentum. And that would be positive news in terms of exit activity.
Although IPOs, I guess, account for 15 to 20% based on what you've just suggested, there is, of course, people use IPOs as a signal. You know, I think you suggested that the IPO volumes is an important barometer for broader exit activity, even if it is a, you know, relatively small percentage. What has that market looked like? There's a lot of complaints about it being closed. What do the data say about that?
Well, essentially, the IPO market here in the US shut when interest rates were hiked aggressively. In 2023, relative to 2022, proceeds fell by 95% in the US IPO market. So one can say the market essentially shut. Now, more recently, we have seen some recovery at a relatively depressed basis. So in the first half of this year, there were 106 IPOs on US exchanges. This includes foreign companies that went public in the US. Now, 10 of these companies that went public in the first half of this year were actually buyout-backed. Total proceeds in the first half of this year came in at roughly $21 billion. That's comparable with the volume we had in 22 and 23, you know, for the entire years. So we do see some stabilization. We are far away from levels we had in 2019 or 2020, but at least a stabilization in deal activity in the US IPO market and some recovery.
So obviously the decline in exits has proven challenging for some limited partners who are expecting some of those proceeds from asset sales to liquefy their portfolio, maybe fund some programmatic expenditures, you know, other purposes. How have LPs responded to those liquidity issues? Is there a greater reliance on that secondary market, which plays such a critical role in these moments?
Well, you know, when we discuss this issue with our limited partners, we fear that many have cash flow models that make particular assumptions. And one of the critical assumptions is that current distributions essentially fund capital calls. Now, in a situation where interest rates increase that dramatically, those cash flow models tend to break down. And this is precisely what happened. So a lot of limited partners faced significant liquidity issues. How have they responded? Well, they have responded by recalibrating their commitment pacing, which is visible in the fundraising market. Mm-hmm. Now, initially, those liquidity issues have been exacerbated by what people call the denominator effect. Valuations in public markets responded significantly more rapidly to rate hikes than private valuations. And a lot of limited partners found themselves overexposed to private equity. Now, the denominator effect has been diminished by the recent substantial recovery in public valuations. essentially the denominator effect has disappeared. What has not yet quite disappeared are those liquidity issues. So when we look at cash flows, and more specifically net distributions, those have remained negative until the first quarter of this year, the last data point we've got. And in response to this, a lot of limited partners have recalibrated their commitment pacing. We don't have data in real time. What we do see is it takes a lot longer to get to a final close. And this is particularly visible in the venture capital market, where new commitments have declined by roughly 60%. The effect is significantly smaller in buyouts, which brings me to the issue of returns. The venture capital market has been affected in terms of performance much more significantly by the rate hikes we've seen over the past 2 years. Buyouts, by contrast, have turned out to be significantly more robust in terms of performance.
And is that just failures of existing businesses? Perhaps they were losing money and needed, you know, subsequent rounds of equity to stay alive, and that equity was not forthcoming. Is that what's happened in the venture space to explain that return shortfall?
Yeah, well, absolutely. So essentially, when we look at the 3-year pooled trailing horizon IRRs in the venture capital market, globally, those have been essentially flat. No returns after very significant returns in the previous years. So in response to the substantial recovery in venture capital returns after the global financial crisis, a lot of capital was invested in venture capital. Some venture capital funds raised as much as $5, $6, $7 billion. Now, this time is over. So limited partners have been sort of disappointed by the returns over the last 2 to 3 years and have adjusted their commitments to this particular market segment.
And in general, would you say that there was expectations perhaps that successor funds would provide funding for the next series or next round of funding for some of those companies? And when that fundraising was not forthcoming, that the cash wasn't either, and then some of the companies failed? Is that the way to think about that process?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, so many unicorns were minted over the past 7 or 8 years, right? And so these valuations increased dramatically. And the velocity of the fundraising cycle or the private equity cycle more generally increased dramatically. And in particular, in venture capital, a lot of funds came back to market just after 18 or 24 months. And they deployed the capital very rapidly. Now, it's much more difficult for startups to get funding across the entire range of stages, from early stage all the way to expansion stages. Now, one should keep in mind that a lot of venture capital investors are what some of my colleagues call tourist investors. Now, these are not venture capital funds. These are non-traditional investors, including mutual funds, sovereign wealth funds, and so on and so forth. Not necessarily venture capital funds. Those have exited the market to a significant degree as returns have adjusted.
So we're halfway through the year, two global private market quarterlies down, two to go. What do you have your eye on for the remainder of 2024?
Well, I guess the most important issue right now from my perspective is the exit situation. There has been a very significant backlog, and to the extent that we anticipate a recovery in the fundraising market, we need to see a turnaround in cash flows. And that's very much a function of exit activity. Keep in mind that the average holding period in the US buyout market has increased very significantly. 30% of companies backed by private equity have been held for 5 years or longer. The sort of medium to long-term average in terms of holding periods is more like 4 years. So the significantly more challenging situation in terms of exits has led to significantly longer holding periods. And before the private equity cycle fires on all cylinders, we need to see increased activity on the exit side. I'm less worried about new transactions.
Mm-hmm. Well, Peter, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you very much, Jason. And I'm sure the second half of this year will be as exciting as the first half. As and you alluded to a possible rate cut in the US as the Fed might be easing monetary policy. Thanks very much, Jason.
On behalf of the team here at Carlyle, thank you for listening. And I hope you'll join us again for our next episode of Insights and Indicators.